You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. I am not joined by my co-host, Chris Thornton, as he is busy, you know, dealing with the hangover that comes from celebrating the news. The Jacksonville Jaguars are going to sign former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Nick Foles on Wednesday when the new league year begins. They have agreed to terms on a four-year, $88 million contract with $50.1 million in guaranteed money. And that came as a little bit of a surprise to me. They're paying on average $22 million a year. Now, that is obviously something that they can work around. The Jaguars have proven this time and time again that they can find a way to maneuver around the salary cap. And what they will be doing most likely is turning a lot of this into a signing bonus to come off the bat as an easy cap hit in year one. And they proved that they can do this by last year's free agency class. No one really knew that the Jaguars were going to go after someone like Andrew Norwell, who became the highest paid guard in NFL history on, what was it, I guess Thursday night when the deals were allowed to be signed, or maybe it was during the tampering period, but we all woke up to the news the next morning that Norwell was going to be a Jag on that contract. And the thing is yes, that contract was huge. 5 years, $66 million with $30 million in guaranteed. But you know what his base salary was in 2018? $2 million. And his prorated bonus was $3 million. Now, however, the signing bonus was $15 million right up front. So he got $15 million in his bank account. But the way that it's structured is that the bonus is prorated over the length of the contract. He had the money, but on the cap, it looks like it's pushed throughout the length of his contract. In return, his cap number for 2018 was a mere $5 million. 2.8% of the team's cap for that year. So it's obviously something they're experienced in working with. I'm sure they're going to do the same thing with Foles. I'm sure that despite his average salary being $22 million, it's probably going to be a large chunk of the bonus will come, the signing bonus will obviously be pushed throughout the contract, but he'll get a good amount of it up front. He should probably get a base salary somewhere in the mid-teens when it's all said and done for the 2019 season. And that gives the Jags flexibility. That should leave them right now, as things stand, with about $30 million in cap space. They are expected to release quarterback Blake Bortles. I wouldn't be shocked if they release someone like defensive tackle Avery Jones, which would get them closer to $38 million in cap space. So you take off 15 and they're roughly sitting at $20 to $23 million. It just depends on how things finally shake out. They're going to have to re-sign some depth guys. You think maybe Eric Flowers is an offensive lineman that came in and played durably. Wasn't great, but he was a guy that you can trust his depth most likely. Probably bring a guy like him back. Probably bring a guy like James O'Shaughnessy back. And these are going to be really cheap contracts. Like, we're looking at maybe $1 million against the cap in that first year of the deal. So they're going to have to bring back some depth guys like that. They might try and go after someone else. The wide receiver room needs a lot of help. Nick Foles has proven that, you know, he does need some help in order to win some games. In Philadelphia, he had a really great supporting cast. Running back by committee that wasn't as great in 2018 as it was in 2017, but it got the job done. In 2017, they had three different types of tight ends that all made huge impacts in Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, and Trey Burton. And then this past year, they still had Ertz, but they brought in Dallas Goedert as a rookie, and he contributed really well for being a rookie. Receiving core of Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Aguilar, among others, they brought in Golden Tate midway through the year. He's always had weapons around him that's really made him a lot better of a quarterback. I think that Foles is able to play decently without that great of a supporting cast, but he hasn't proven that he can lift an offense like that. So they are going to have to bring in some weapons with that. In which case, with the money they have left, I wouldn't be shocked if they went out and signed one more player. It could be a Golden Tate. It could be maybe one of the mid-tier tight ends. Maybe it could be an offensive lineman. I wouldn't bank on the offensive lineman as much unless it's more depth purposes, because I don't think there's many high-quality starters left at a position of need for the Jaguars in free agency right now. I think Golden Tate makes a ton of sense. I think there are other receivers out there that they'll probably take a look at. Same thing as tight ends. You got an older veteran who's still productive in Jared Cook, who hasn't signed a deal just yet, and he proved to be a very reliable target for Derek Carr this past year in Oakland. So the Jaguars do have some maneuverability. They've got some stuff that they can do with the way that they structure contracts. I'm not going to, you know, say who I think they'll target just yet, because I want to see what that, you know, what that first year salary will look like, just so we have an idea as to what amount they will actually spend. It's easy to assume that they will have that extra money put aside because of the way they structure it. I just want to see what the official numbers are before I say, okay, now I'm comfortable paying Golden Tate whatever amount of money his market looks like, which I'd assume is in the $8 to $11 million range. It's just hard to predict that unless you have something to back it up. It's not an indictment of anyone asking that question. It's a totally fair question to ask. Just that, you know, I want to see exactly what the figures are for Foles before I can comfortably say that they can enter a certain player's market. So we'll just go, we'll have to see. We should find that out very soon. For all we know, they might sign someone before then, because they know what the figures will look like before any of us do. So best for us to just, you know, think about who we want, hope they do it, but can't really predict exactly what markets they'll enter. But regardless, Jacksonville has their franchise quarterback. I'm going to break down exactly what Foles will bring to Jacksonville in our next segment. And after that, I'm answering the five best questions from Twitter that I got after the signing. We'll be back after these messages. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835. Or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835 and www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through New Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So next, we're going to start looking at some of Nick Foles' numbers from the past 2 years in Philadelphia to get Jaguars fans, you know, a clue of what they're actually getting in Nick Foles, the 6'6", 243-pound quarterback. So obviously, another big-bodied guy coming in here, just in case anyone cares about that, compared to, you know, like the Kyler Murrays of the world, if anyone thought they were going to go after Kyler Murray. A lot of size difference there. But anyway, that's not really the point. Going to go ahead and look at his passing maps, how he's done versus pressure. I don't think this is going to change much of what the offense does, other than you might see him work out of the gun a lot more. That's what they did in Philly, where Nick Foles saw a lot of success playing out of shotgun. Got to see how that will mesh with running back Leonard Fournette, but at the same time, you're going to go with your quarterback strengths over your running back strengths any day of the week. But looking at what he's done in terms of the passing game is that he wins on the underneath. In 2017, he completed just over 80% of his passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. That's exactly what the Jaguars want to hear. He's going to be Dede Westbrook's best friend. I wouldn't be shocked if Dede Westbrook went over 1,000 yards receiving this upcoming season. He's already their best receiver on the roster, whether they add another guy or not. I've been saying for a while that Dede Westbrook is wide receiver one, and we thought he broke out last year. Just wait until this upcoming year. He's going to have a great season with Foles, in my opinion. This is just what Foles likes to do. In 2017, going deep, That definitely wasn't in Foles' favor. Going between 10 to 20 yards of the line of scrimmage, he did decent. In the middle of the field especially, he completed 8 of 14 passes in the middle of the field between 10 to 20 yards for 2 touchdowns, 98 yards, 118.5 passer rating. Otherwise, not too much to hang your hat on there. On the left side, he went 2 for 6 with 2 touchdowns, which boosted his rating a bit. On the right side, completed 2 of 7 passes for 30 yards. Deep game, going 20 yards plus in 2017 regular season. He only completed 2 passes on 12 attempts, so it wasn't as much of his game there. We saw some improvement in 2018, though. I'm now pulling up those numbers, so I apologize for stalling. So he got a lot more snaps in 2018, obviously. He started off the season as Carson Wentz was still recovering. Then Wentz got hurt again, and Foles had to come back in and play some more. So his numbers are, you know, there's a lot more to it in the 2018 season than there was the 2017. You get a bit of a bigger sample size to really try and grade exactly how he did. So he completed 84 of 104 passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. Once again, just over 80% of his passes. So I really think the Jaguars are going to try and keep the same thing going, where they run a bunch of West Coast concepts, get the ball out quickly, try and rely on the run game as much as they can. I think they're going to stick to the same formula. They might try and push some more vertical game in, just because, you know, I do think that Foles throws a better deep ball when it's all said and done than Bortles, but at the same time, it's not his strong suit either. They're going to want to do a lot of what he's good at, considering he is now the franchise quarterback and making franchise QB money. However, in 2018, we did see some improvement in the deep game. He completed 6 of 17 passes going deep with a touchdown to the deep middle of the field and a 143.8 passer rating to the deep middle, 20-plus yards. That's where DJ Chark's going to win. Running posts with a guy like DJ Chark is going to be one of the big plays that the Jaguars run in 2018. That's where I think Foles and Chark will make their money. I mean, I tweeted last night that I think DJ Chark is going to start winning a little more vertical because that's what he did in college, and I think that Foles is able to hit him on that, and Chark liked the tweet. So I have a feeling that Chark will want to play a little bit more vertical, and I think that Foles' best, you know, option when going vertical is to the deep middle. And in his college tape, DJ Chark won on a lot of posts. That's just what he was good at, with deep speed, making a double move and getting to the middle of the field. That's where I think he and Foles are really going to have a connection. In the intermediate level, 10 to 20 yard range from the line of scrimmage, Foles was also pretty solid. His worst passer rating there was a 75.5 to the middle right. He went 5 of 9 for 64 yards, a touchdown and an interception. He really wins in the short level of the field across the entire thing, and in the middle of the field when going anything past that. So that's exactly where we're going to see a lot of routes, you know, going. We're going to see some mesh concepts to the middle of the field like we've seen with Blake. I just think they have a more competent quarterback in-house to, you know, get these things done. Now we're going to look at Nick Foles versus pressure, and we're going to start in 2017. And this is where things get a little interesting to me. In 2017, he did not handle pressure well. Under pressure in 2017, he went 13 of 34 for 117 yards and 2 interceptions. That's a 38.2% completion rating. No pressure, on the other hand, he went 44 of 67 with 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 420 yards, 65.7% completion rating. Versus the blitz, 43 of 73. When he was not blitzed, 43 of 73, 389 yards, 3 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 58.9% completion percentage. When blitzed, 14 of 28, 50%, 148 yards, and 2 touchdowns. It almost seems like he plays better when he's blitzed versus when he's just simply pressured. Just because they're sending a blitz doesn't mean that they necessarily landed the pressure. However, there's more guys in the box. It is a bit more intimidating to go against a blitz versus a standard four-man front. So it's a bit of an enigma. And we saw that again in 2018. He played better under pressure as a whole in 2018. When he wasn't pressured, he went 108 of 145 with 991 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. 74.5% of his passes were completed. That's great. He played fantastic when there wasn't any pressure in 2018. When he was under pressure, he went 33 of 50, 66% for 422 yards, a touchdown, and interception. That's a lot better. That's nearly double his completion percentage from 2017 when facing pressure. So you saw a lot of improvement there. And I'm not sure exactly what contributes to that. Maybe he just saw a lot more growth and more playing time, but he played a lot better under pressure. However, when you're breaking it down in the blitzes, when he wasn't blitzed, 114 of 163, 69.9% of his passes were completed for 1,084 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. The 4 interceptions isn't great, but at the end of the day, completing nearly 70% of your passes, like, that's great. No matter what you're doing, that's pretty good. When he was blitzed, 27 of 32, 84.4% of his passes were completed for 329 yards and two touchdowns and no interceptions. His highest yards per attempt out of those four categories came when he was blitzed. So they call him BDN for the jokes in the locker room, but that's also, you know, a lot of people take that as like he's a confident dude. He shows a lot of confidence against the blitz. He 84.4% of his passes against the blitz in 2018. Like that's fantastic. You don't hear that very much. That's the sign of a confident quarterback. That is something the Jaguars are getting, is that Foles may not be that great, but I do think he's got some balls. And that's going to be huge, because we saw Blake Bortles melt against blitzes in the past. And teams would intimidate him by putting 8 players in the box just to get in his head. I don't think that's going to happen as much with Nick Foles, as these numbers at least indicate. When we come back, we're taking your 5 questions from Twitter. All right, so let's go ahead and get to the questions, because I know you guys had them. And I asked for 5, the 5 best, and I got like 30 different questions, a lot of different ones to pick from, a lot of good ones to pick from. But I've picked out the best 5, took me a little bit, and I tried to, you know, keep them a bit different. I didn't want to answer the same thing over and over again. So first, coming from Refo Mode, my buddy Sharif. So the Foles deal means we most likely don't trade up or draft a quarterback at 7, right? I would totally eliminate it. This deal is probably structured in a way that they can get out after 2 or 3 years. If they lower the cap hit in year 1, then I think it'll probably be a little harder to get after 2, but they can probably still do it. I think 3 is probably the sweet spot. But they've obviously done this in a way that they think that they can win immediately, and they want to build around Foles. They don't want to draft a quarterback at 7. I would love to be wrong about that, because I think Haskins would be such a great quarterback for this team in the long term. But this just seems to be the route they're going. I don't think quarterback is in their plans even before round 2, quite honestly. They might use one of their extra thirds on a quarterback, but even that, I'm not too sure of. Coming from Cody Hutchinson, which receiver benefits more from this signing, DD Westbrook or DJ Chark? So I just talked about those two guys, but I mean, I didn't answer that question necessarily, because I think that Foles is going to benefit both of them. DD Westbrook broke out as an underneath West Coast style possession receiver last year. I think he's going to do even better with a quarterback that can lead him the ball, so he doesn't have to get constantly bullied around like by linebackers, which he did last year. He was able to break a lot of tackles, but he took a lot of hits, and he really took a lot of hits. Like, he takes them well. That's one thing about Didi, is that, yeah, he's a smaller receiver, but he's a tough one. And I think he's really going to benefit from not having to take such a bruising by getting the ball led his way to create more yards after the catch. I do think he breaks 1,000 yards receiving this year. That's my take. I'm planting my flag on that. Injury aside, of course, I think that he's in a position to break out as, you know, one of the best possession receivers in the NFL at this point. Like, we saw that growth last year. I really believe that he's got that capability with a decent quarterback in-house. However, DJ Chark, they tried to turn him into the same thing they were doing with DD Westbrook on a bit more of a vertical route tree. They were still only having him go 10-ish yards max per route. They had that one deep ball against Kansas City that he hauled in, and they decided to just stop doing that. And from there on out, he was running possession routes. I don't think that'll be the case going forward. I think he'll be the starting X this year, replacing Moncrief. So he'll be taking a lot of the one-on-ones, and he'll have to win with speed and polished route running to get deep. And like I said earlier, Foles can hit the deep middle of the field really well. That's what he proved on his passing maps over the past 2 years, that if he could hit anything in the deep field, it was to the deep middle. So you're talking posts, you're talking seams, stuff like that. So if you have Chark playing the big slot, then he's probably running a lot of seams. If you have him out at X, where I believe he'll get the majority of his snaps, he'll be running a lot of posts. That's where I think he'll win. And the fact that Chark did not get much playing time or much production at all last year, I really believe that it'll be he who has more to benefit from Foles out of the two, but that's not necessarily a slight at Didi. That's more, they both can do it, but the expectation for Didi to be good is already there, whereas Chark is such an unknown that I think that this fit will do him wonders and will get him known. And I do believe he will be starting this upcoming year, as they haven't brought back Moncrief. They'll probably sign someone, but I don't think it'd be to come in and compete at the starting X position. I think if it's Golden Tate, Golden Tate can play all three receiver positions. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him line up paired with Westbrook at the YZ combo, where I think Westbrook will shine a lot more than playing out at X. But you give Chark, a guy who's got size and speed combo, to take on the one-on-ones out there. I think that, I do believe that is their plan. From Lewis Kopic, what does this mean for the number 7 pick? Do we still go quarterback to develop or focus on another position? So essentially, you know, kind of like a question like Sharif asked. So I already nailed out, they're not going to go QB there. I really don't think it. However, I'm going to use the second half of that question to, you know, try and give a better answer. I believe it's going to be the best offensive player available to them other than QB at that point. Defense should be out of the picture. If they go defense, they've failed. That's just how I'm taking this. Unless, by the grace of God, Nick Bosa or Quinnen Williams fall, which is not happening. It just won't. Unless they fail a drug test or something like that. Or get injured. But that's besides the point. TJ Hawkinson makes a ton of sense. He's probably the safest tight end in this class and has a lot of upside too. And we saw last year in Philly, Dallas Goedert played really well, had the highest graded game of any tight end in the NFL by PFF. And he was a rookie. And he was a backup to one of the best tight ends in the league. And yet he still put up, you know, pretty good numbers for a tight end in general. Not great, but I mean, the variance in tight end statistics across the league is so big. And he probably put up low to mid-tier starter production as a backup to one of the best tight ends in the league. He's starting somewhere else. You probably get a lot of production out of him as a rookie. And I think Hawkinson can offer something similar. We also saw, I mean, we just talked about Foles and how he handles pressure and blitzes. I do think they're going to want to upgrade the offensive line. I think before round two is over, they will have a new offensive lineman starting. Whether it's Juwan Taylor at 7 or Chris Lindstrom at 38. Interior probably is the round two, and you know, outside would be round one, in my opinion. But if they go offensive line at all, I think, well, no, I'm saying they will go offensive line before round two. I'm sold on that. It just depends on how their board shakes out. If they'd rather go interior, or if they want to go outside. Outside round one, interior round two, definitely not going to be a quarterback at 7th overall. So, money aside and love for Haskins aside, do you think Foles takes us back to the playoffs? From Jonathan Walliser. So, I think they have to nail the rest of this offseason, and if they do, I think Foles is capable. I think Foles is a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great one. I think he's a good one with a good supporting cast around him. Jacksonville has to nail that, and that is why they cannot afford to go defense at 7th overall. Even if it means they're going with the boring offensive lineman pick, they have to go offense and just do as much as they can to help Foles, because they already, you know, kind of wasted a window a bit in what they had in the 2017 season by doubling down on Blake, and that really hurt their chances of competing. But they've reset what their window is with Foles and the talent they still have on defense. They cannot afford to draft a backup at this point. And that unfortunately means they wouldn't go quarterback as well. They have to build around Foles and turn this thing around immediately. They need to win. They need to have a winning record in 2018. Otherwise, I believe the Foles signing becomes a failure. That's the expectation. They paid him to win now. And they need to do everything in their power to make sure that they can. So as long as they do that, as long as they have a good rest of their offseason and build that offense well, then I think that they can compete in 2018 or 2019. Do I think they're going to be Super Bowl bound? Probably not just yet. But I think that they can get back to the playoffs as long as they do this right. Then from Willie P, this is a question that I've been asking. There had to have been other teams driving the price up, right? Or do we cave and give all the leverage? That's the question that needs to be answered. It sounds like Jacksonville did this to themselves. And I understand that they can manipulate the cap to make it possible to sign other players. I still don't understand why they paid him $22 million a year on average. I know it's not going to be $22 million out the gate and that they can work with it. And that's great that they can do that. But they could have avoided having to deal with that by giving him less a year because they don't have, there was no competing market. The Washington is the reported only other team that had any interest, or no, I take that back, that Foles' camp wanted to have interest. According to Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, they wanted Washington to have interest a while back, and then they went and traded for Case Keenum. It was only Jacksonville. So Jacksonville, from the reported original 17, 18, $19 million range, pushed it up to 22 by themselves. That's just, you know, that's what they did that to themselves. And I get they can figure out a way to manipulate where they're at right now, but what sounds better? Manipulating $22 million down to 15 in the 2019 season, or manipulating $18 million down to $10 million? And sign someone even better in free agency, or maybe bring in two starting caliber free agents, maybe one on offense and maybe another safety, just because they let Gibson go, or something just to bring some more balance and bring in two starters rather than maybe one with where they're at. That's the difference that it could have made by not pushing the price up and bidding against yourself. I understand that it's fixable. I understand it's not a huge problem in terms of they have absolutely no money to spend. But they could have had a lot more if they didn't bid against themselves. And that's my biggest issue with the signing so far. Not that I'm surprised or mad they signed Foles. I knew that was coming. But how they handled it, driving that price up. And no, the respect thing is BS. Don't let anyone tell you that it's about respect. I'd almost rather it be about respect, but it's still such a terrible, terrible excuse for what it is. Out of respect to Foles to give him a bigger deal. I'd almost rather it be that than hearing they bid against themselves and look like idiots. But I believe that that's exactly what they did, and the respect thing is an excuse. Not to say I hate the signing. I knew it was coming. I was expecting it. I think Foles will be good. But the way they handled that signing and drove their own price up is what I think is bad. Because they could go and land more talent. I think that there's a $5 million difference in what they could bring in or re-sign or do whatever they need to do this offseason to help this team contend if they don't bid against themselves and keep it at around 18. Because Foles had no other market. He probably would have signed at $18 million because no other team was coming anywhere close. So that's my answer to that question. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Locked On Jaguars. We'll be back with more free agency news as it comes. Then starting to look forward to the draft and the rest of this team building to get this team ready for 2019. We'll catch up with you later.